From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome back to Bob After Dark, wow. The show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello, everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, ever-the-heart-throb of Bob After Dark, my friend, my brother, my producer, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob. Great to be back. It seems so long. Another episode of Bob After Dark.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
Good to be back.
I owe you guys an explanation, I guess. Well, I've been gone. It's not easy to talk, to say this out loud, but I had a heart attack. Life got the better of me, and I'm here, though. That's the main thing,
Bob.
It wasn't serious. It was minor. There's probably no, definite problems, 100%, permanent damage to me, at least. I'm following up with doctors. I got tests coming up. The good news is I'm here, and I didn't need heart surgery. I'm very lucky about that. God, I miss the show. I miss being here. The show is my baby, right? Bob After Dark's my entire existence. I love this, and I spend time with you as much as I possibly can on account. It's hard when life gets in the way, and it seems like life's been getting away a lot this past 2 years. So I'm it's hard to try to sort through life to get back to what you love the most, and that is, my podcast. It's my radio show. I got people in my life I care about, but as far as an abstract thing, Bob After Dark is the love of my life outside of, people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good to be back. It's good to be here.
Well, Bob, I think everybody could agree with me in wishing you a welcome back.
Yeah,
and again, you're still here. That's the main thing. That is key. Health does come first.
100%.
But you're back now cranking out the hits with Bob After
the
Dark.
The hits. So what's been going on with you?
Well,
no heart attacks. I
don't know. Nothing nearly as much going on than it is with you. But Bob, just kind of keeping things at bay here, and weekends. Why all these weekends blend together? So it's tough to give you a recap of really much anything since we kind of missed a few weekends here. But I happy to be back, and happy you're here. And I think the crowd is excited
that.
And ready to go.
I'm happy to be back. I was at a convention this past weekend. I was just there working.
Yeah,
Bob After Dark related, and I didn't catch your name, fan. So I didn't catch the name, and I'm sorry about that. But if you're listening, I know you're listening because you came up to me. I made this post saying I wasn't doing good, and this person came up to me at the show. I was in ASIN in Chicago. And I'm going to assume gentleman, male presenting. If I got it wrong, I'm sorry. We'll call him he for the moment. He came up and he said, "Bob After Dark, are you okay?" And I had to think about it for a second. I was like, "Why wouldn't I be?" I'm like, "Oh wait, that's right. I had a mild heart attack."
Yeah, you tend not to forget it.
It's one of those things that's like I could put out of sight, out of mind, right? So He was so concerned about me, and he's like, "You're not talking here, are you?" And I'm like, "No, buddy, I kind of slipped my mind during the application process, and I'm really glad did, because I don't think I wouldn't have been 100% going up there talking in front of a group of people. It's hard enough. It was hard enough just being there, and I had to take a lot of breaks just to be there for, working stuff. But he came up to me and he was like, I want you to know how much your show means to me." And he's like, "But your show, in essence changed his life." And he was very happy and very nice to say that to me. And I think he was excited to talk to me in person. And he's like, I, So whoever you are, I just want you to know, man, you made me cry a little bit when I was there after you left. I did tear up a bit. And, you know, you forget a lot when you're doing the, you know, when you're podcasting, especially, or you work on the radio. It's a little different than like a visual media.
Yeah, you don't, right? you don't see them.
You don't
yeah.
see the people. I see your comments. I see your questions. I see your concerns. I have people that email me and check on me and stuff like that. But it's different when it's not like a live studio audience or something, because you forget that you're talking to another person. So it's really cool. And so whatever your name was, thank you. That was very sweet of you to say.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing, because you do these shows, Bob. You put them out there. You see some comments, of course, but you don't really get to meet each and every listener
yes.
or viewer out there. And when that happens, it's a magical thing.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah.
So we're going to be back on a normal schedule for now. We're going to try to play catch up and get more content back out to you. If something happens, I will make sure Count knows so he can relay it. But at the moment, doctors are all, you know, expecting a good recovery.
Good.
So that's the important thing.
Yeah.
So just bear with me, guys. But if this is your first time ever listening to an episode of Bob After Dark, we attempt to your weekly
yes.
podcast radio show, where we talk about everything legends, lore, supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, and of course, Count Panic's favorite TV show to watch when he was home from school sick as a child.
Oh, man. Price is Right.
I feel like that was the staple of everybody's childhood when they were home sick.
It was either that or you sneak in some Jerry Springer where nobody else was looking. But Price
oh,
is Right.
Oh, geez, don't let your folks know.
No, Price is Right was the safe bet.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, we split the show up into two parts. The first part of the show is the spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, submit news articles to me that I cover on the show. Anything where it's weird advances in science, that borderline on science fiction, any kind of weird cryptid in the news, general high strangeness, and paranormal stuff. And then we take a little break, and we come back, and we have the meat and potatoes, the lore of the week. So, as we are here in the beginning part of the episode, let's dive into the news stories. How's that sound?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, Count. So, our first news article today comes to us from Live Science.
Live Science.
Live Science, written by Paul Sutter. I hope I named this correctly. A strange star system may hold first evidence of an ultra-rare dark matter star. In a distant star system, a sun-like star orbits an invisible object that may be the first example of a boson star made of dark matter, new research suggests. Astronomers long thought that a peculiar star system observed by the European Space Agency's Gaia satellite was simply a case of a star orbiting a black hole. But now, two astronomers are challenging that claim, finding evidence that suggests that far stranger, possibly a never-before-seen type of star made of invisible dark matter. Their research, which is yet to be peer-reviewed, was published April 18th on the preprint server AirVex. The system itself consists of a sun-like star and, well, something else. The star weighs less than our sun, which is a 0.93 solar mass, by the way, Count Panic, if you were interested, and has roughly the same chemical abundance as our sun.
Really?
Its mysterious companion is much more massive, around 11 solar masses, which I guess is pretty big. The object orbit each other at a distance of 1.4 astronomical units, about the distance of which Mars orbits the sun, making a complete orbit every 188 days. Mm. What could that dark companion be? Well, it could be possibly it's a black hole that's actually going around the dark matter.
Yeah.
While that would easily fit the bill of terms of orbital observations, that hypothesis has challenges. Black holes form from the deaths of massive stars, and for this situation to arise, a sun-like star would have had to have formed in companionship with one of those monsters. While outright not impossible, that scenario requires an extraordinary amount of fine-tuning to make a match happen and keep those objects in orbit around each other for millions of years. So perhaps the dark orbital companion is something more exotic, as researchers propose in the new study. Maybe, they suggest, it's a clump of dark matter particles.
Hmm.
Dark matter, by the way, is the invisible form of matter that makes up the majority of mass of every single galaxy. We still do not have an understanding solid understanding of what it actually is. Most theoretical models assume that dark matter is smoothly distributed in each galaxy, but those are models that allow it to clump up in and of itself. So usually it's just kind of like spread thinly. This is the first time that they're seeing it in a conglomerate, maybe, which is huge.
Yeah.
It's a pretty big deal. So I know I spent a lot of time talking about some sciencey terms, and we're going to hope that you got an opinion on this. So the hashtag panics take on the concept of this dark matter star.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because we just had the folks from the Challenger Learning Center here earlier in the studio.
I wish I would have known that. I would have passed a news article to you to get their opinion on it.
Laura Bates and Emma Rose from the Challenger Learning Center. And
Good people.
Yeah. They might have more, you know, I know they're not scientists, but maybe some more space knowledge behind this. Again, this stuff, you know, is complicated. The dark matter, the black holes, the space, the quantum leaps and whatnot. Is that a thing? That kind of just blows my mind. So I really don't know how to pinpoint this one, Bob. I mean, I'm not going to act like a scientist. I play one on TV.
I was going to say, we play one on TV. Yeah. Basically, in essence, the idea of dark matter is like it makes up a lot of what we have, but we never, it's just kind of spread. So think of it like an ocean, I guess. And this is something where we're seeing where it's like an actual dense, like, object made of it, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah,
that's what we got. Yeah. Maybe you can bug them and get a better answer of what this means. I thought it was cool. You know, a little different than normal Bob After Dark stuff, but yeah, I appreciate that kind of thing. All right, you're moving. You ready to move on to some Bigfoot stuff?
Oh, Bigfoot stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, hit me with that. My mom would be fascinated.
This story comes to us from the Prince William Times. That is exactly where it's from. Written by Cher Muzak, the Times staff writer. Mm. And this is the... Cartlett residents need help tracking down a Sasquatch statue. Bigfoot is missing from a Cartlett resident, and its owners are asking for the public's help to bring him home. Someone nabbed the 5 feet, 400-pound, hand-painted Sasquatch statue from the front lawn on its Greenwich home here sometime Friday night or Saturday morning, so this past weekend. Mary O'Brien, 35, took to social media this afternoon, or Saturday afternoon, when she first discovered that her beloved statue was missing. This is a long shot, but someone stole our 5 foot stone Bigfoot from the end of our driveway on Greenwich Road within the last 24 hours. She wrote, "If anyone's kid shows up with a giant Bigfoot statue, please kindly return him home." O'Brien wrote that the statue has a lot of sentimental value and she would like him returned. Truly, no questions asked. Even if it was during the daytime, literally, I don't care. I just want him back. If somebody wants to pull into the driveway, drop him off, I won't even come out and yell, she said during an interview with the Prince William Sunday Morning Times edition. Despite being very sad about the situation, O'Brien said she has not contacted the police to report the theft. "We were all stupid teenagers," once O'Brien said, noting that she thinks it was possibly an end of the school year prank. She said the assailants must have been strong and quick and had a calculated plan to steal the Bigfoot because of its weight and size. "This wasn't a jump out of your truck and grab them on a whim situation," she said. "Unfortunately, the statue was damaged when it was stolen. Part of Bigfoot's foot was broken off and left in the yard," she said. "But we could fix him up. Just, you know, do CPR to put him back together if the statue is returned," she said. O'Brien said whoever stole the statue was probably surprised at its heft when they removed it, because when she purchased it from a county traditions emporium in Berkeley Spring, West Virginia, it took a forklift to load it in her truck. O'Brien said that she and her partner, Matt Payne, 40 years old, drove a couple hours to purchase the $600 statue and bring him home in the front yard 8 months ago. And it took three people to slide him off the back of the truck and place him on a level spot next to our driveway. Mm. Why did they buy a Bigfoot for their front yard, you might ask? Well, I mean, if they're anything like us, that makes total sense, but there's a reason for it. O'Banion, a Noakesville native, said that she and Payne from Haymarket, always admired a house in Manzest that had white bicycles in front of it. I always loved that. The house had an identity, she said. Everybody knew that house, so we were joking that we wanted our thing to be, she said. I love Bigfoot. Matt loves Bigfoot. So when we saw a Bigfoot statue in the masonry yard on a business trip, they decided that they were going to go buy this Bigfoot statue. Since the statue has been in front of their home, it has brought so much joy to friends, neighbors, and even passerby, O'Brien said. People have stopped to take pictures with Bigfoot about twice a week, she said. He's silly, funny, and he brings a lot of joy to people who drive by, she said. I come home, and he will have a little costume on, she said. Our friends have decorated Bigfoot for the holidays since he's been around. He's worn a Santa hat and even was decked out for Cinco de Mayo.
Wow, how about that? Yeah.
O'Brien said that they have security cameras pointed at their house, but not at the Bigfoot, so they don't have any leads at this time. Mm. They're just requesting that it be returned home as soon as possible. It is a bummer, and I'm sad about it. Hashtag panic stick.
Bob, this is a travesty. And again, I know Bigfoot is beloved throughout the whole world. Even yesterday, they had a special on Bigfoot on one of the channels. Even the week before that, there was like a William Shatner talking about Bigfoot. Bigfoot's still beloved to this very day, is the point of the matter. And to steal somebody's beloved statue is just despicable. And those Bigfoot statues, you see them around.
Yeah.
They come in different shapes and sizes, but some of them are just massive. I don't know how to get them around anywhere, but hopefully this could be resolved and Bigfoot gets returned to its rightful owner because somebody's missing him tonight.
I will tell you that this is the second story of a Bigfoot stolen in two months that we covered. Because the last one was the family in Wisconsin, where they were auctioning it off for charity because it was decked out in, like, if memory serves right, it was like a breast cancer awareness Bigfoot or something. I could be wrong. But I remember it was something to do with charity, and someone nabbed that one too. So maybe this is more common than we thought, and people are just, you know, because I search for these things, it just happens to pop up. I'm not from the area. I don't know if you're going to hear this person, and maybe we'll reach out for an interview. I hope your Bigfoot statue comes home. Yeah. $600 is a lot of money to pay for a handcrafted statue.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And for it just to go missing, that sucks.
And we know what it's made out of? Did you say
it? Oh, it's probably made out of, they saw it in a masonry yard, so I'm assuming concrete.
Concrete. How do you heck even get that out of there? I mean, it seems like a pain at the end of the day. And once you know, I mean, it's got to be around there somewhere. Somebody's probably displaying it somewhere, I would think.
Yeah, or it got hucked in the woods or something. I don't know. I hope they find it.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our last news story. This comes to us from the Como News from Rhode Island. Okay. The Conjuring House is now offering overnight camping experiences. This is written by Jessica Botleho, Botelho. Would you go camping at the Conjuring House? Well, you can do just that, and outdoor camping experiences are now being available at the home made famous by the 2013 horror film. The house, which is located in a small Rhode Island town of Burrillville, is allegedly haunted. This is your chance to experience what has earned the Conjuring House its legendary status, according to the Conjuring House's website. The spirits are calling. Are you brave enough to answer? The ultimate paranormal outdoor adventure incorporates ghosts and camping, or what is being dubbed as camping? G-H-A-M-P-I-N-G. Gamping. Guests will need to pack their bags as well as a whole lot of courage and get ready for a paranormal activity investigating. Our new gamping. I don't know. Gamping. We're gonna call it gamping.
Yep.
Gamping experience will take you beyond the walls of the Conjuring House and immerse you in a land of unforgettable overnight investigation within the walls of our 3 to 4 person tents, than the website notes. With only 8 sites available, these are a perfect base for your overnight adventure to this iconic location. Visitors are to bring their own equipment to investigate what might await in the darkness, because the excursion is sure to test your capacity to experience the paranormal. The 8 campsites were rated on Fright Factor 1 through 10, so guests can better plan their evening. 20 dates from June to October are available, starting at $300 per night. There have been existing overnight bookings at the house with guests staying within the home. Tours of the Conjuring House, which are led by experienced guides, are also offered. You'll journey through the infamous house and learn its history and the spirits that remain here, the website notes. The house, which was made by famous by Ed and Lorraine Warren Case Files, is actual home of the Perrin family hauntings. The family lived there throughout the 1970s and claimed they witnessed paranormal activity. Our family lived among the dead for a decade. The farm known as the old Arnold Estate was here where we all came to understand that we were not alone and there is something beyond our mortal existence, though none of us can tell you precisely what or where we go after death, Andrea Perrin notes on the website. Hashtag panics take.
I mean, it's one of the most terrifying places on earth. Personally, I don't think I would want to stay there, but Bob, I know your answer. I could guess a definite yes.
I don't like camping.
But even if it's a haunted camping trip?
This can come no surprise to all of you.
Really?
I don't like camping.
Well, hey.
I did it once.
Does anybody really like
I did it
camping?
Once. I attempted it once. It almost got me killed.
Yeah.
I don't advise it. Yeah, let's. We have a caller. I'll pick
you
up
take
on
a phone call?
Yeah, I'll take the caller live
we'll
on the air.
We'll take a phone call here.
Hi, you're on the air, caller.
Is this Bob from Bob After Dark?
Is this John, the caller of Bob from Bob After Dark?
Yes, it is. Hey, I'm glad to see you're back, buddy.
Oh, thanks, John. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I missed you the time you were gone. And
John, I missed you too, pal. I appreciate the call-in.
And especially when Tony told me your situation last week. Said a prayer for you there, and I'm glad that so far so good, right?
So far, that's the important thing right now is so far so good. If there was an emergency, I wouldn't be on this air right now. I would have had surgery. So the good news is it's not an emergency situation.
Well, that's good. I hear you. You know, we're big on Bigfoot here.
No, absolutely.
But there's a garden center. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's in Cherville. It's in Cedar Lake. I'm sorry. The Mississippi Cedar Lake. And they got the statues, same thing that you're referring to that was stolen. I've been teased her sometimes, you know, we should get it put in our front yard because she's a big, you know, tremendous Bigfoot fan. But so was, you know, I didn't catch it. Was this like in a residential area?
I'm assuming they didn't have pictures of the house or anything in the story. But from what I gathered, it's probably a very, like, you know, residential area.
Well, that's unbelievable. I think, you know, nothing surprises me anymore, but, you know, like you say, they needed a forklift and, you know, pretty good sized truck to get that thing to her house, wherever she got it from. And for somebody to take it, you know, it's impossible. No matter how many guys to pick it up. And
it's a lot of weight, man. It was 400 pounds.
I mean, the thing is, nobody's seen it. I mean, come on. That's why I said if it's a residential area, I mean, how can you not see somebody, even the noise, you know, the noise that a forklift or something they would have to make to
take 100%. I agree. It had to have been a planned thing. It's very unfortunate, but the more I read these stories, the more common it is. So, folks, protect your Bigfoots. Your big feet, your Sasquatch eye, if you will, if you have the statues out front. Mine sits in the house. I don't put mine outside.
Well, yeah, she seemed like she was really in love with the statues.
Yeah.
And, I could see that. Like I said, we're us being Bigfoot fans. But, you know, somebody stole the statue of Kosciuszko, too. In the park.
I wonder who did that.
And they... you know, they did find it. Somebody did see somebody taking it out of their car in an alley.
This is the modern one.
Yeah.
It was, so, but it was, you know, it was replaced by our mayor, and they had a little ceremony there that it was back. So, you know, so I guess, you know, anything's possible, you know that. But it's a shame, you know, and I kind of hope she gets that statue back, too.
100%. Well, thank you so much, John, for calling in, and thanks for the good words.
Bob, and like I said, glad to hear you.
Thank you so much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
You have a good one. Folks, we're the phone lines are on all the time. You could always call in 219-845-1100. Anytime, if you're listening in podcast land, you could call when we're recording live, and you could get your word questions asked. Or your questions asked, and we can answer
them. We might have answers.
I don't know. You could try your best.
You could try to answer. But we confirmed that none of us are going camping, right?
No. Okay. So that's the thing. I am not a camper.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of cool that they're doing this. I also know that these people that bought this house spent an obscene amount of money on it, and they're trying to get a return on profit, I'm sure. Much like when the Lizzie Borden house got sold. Yeah. Remember, we talked about that a couple of years ago. And now they're offering, like, axe throwing, which I think is extremely distasteful, but that's just me.
Yeah, it's tacky.
You know, if you own something like this, like, I talked to Elliot ACG a lot about this, actually, about the concept of, like, if you own, you know, a haunted location, you're obviously going to have tours or open for investigations. You know, the concept of camping, I mean, you're paying $300 to camp?
Well,
man, I'm going to go to the hotel nearby and sleep in air conditioning.
But they think that's a selling point. You're in a haunted.
I get it.
It's a touristy thing, I guess.
I get it. You want to go with me? You want to go camping at the Conjuring House?
I don't.
Neither do I. I'll stay up all night. I'll be happy to stay there and investigate.
That's what I'm saying. I thought you would just like to go for the investigation.
I would go to the Conjuring House for an investigation, wouldn't you? I mean, that's kind of like an iconic joint to investigate.
Oh, man, it's gotta be. You would be bummed out if you walked out there with nothing.
I have a theory about those really overtly popular haunted locations. Steve, friend of the show, often co-host on here. He always talks about when you over-investigate a place, it's almost like the things that are there are tired of, you know, dealing with people or tired of seeing the equipment.
They're tapped out.
Yeah, they're tapped out. And if they've been offering as many investigations as I've seen people go on there, that place might be tapped out. But, I mean, you could say the same thing about, like, Waverly, right? Waverly is a massive location that tons of people have gone to over the time, but...
I was thinking about that too. Like, say it's been years, decades since the place been, investigated, right? You're going to the place first time. Like when we did the WGLB studios, no investigators go in there. We were the first batch.
We had some good experiences.
NWI Paranormal, yeah. Compared to like the places here locally too that get the kind of investigated often, I do wonder about that. Maybe ghosts are tired about being investigated in certain places, but then they're thrilled when they see people come in for the first time. They want to react.
They want to react. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that's the theory. Count. Good job.
Amazing
stuff.
See, we answered our own questions.
Count, you ready to take a break?
Sure.
All right, Count. We'll be right back for our live fans. Stick around. And for our podcast fans, you're about to be hearing words from a show that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
This is Mike.
This is Jacob.
And this is Matt.
We are Moth Boys,
a podcast on cryptids, conspiracies, and the unknown.
Unknown.
You can catch us every other Monday on, actually, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Thank you.
And we're back.
We're back.
We're back.
Yeah.
Oh, hey there, Count.
Oh, hey there, Bob.
What did you do during break?
Bob, during the break, I went on a full-on Bigfoot investigation.
You went on a Bigfoot. You went Bigfooting. Sasquatching,
yes.
I think is the term. Yeah.
Squatting for Sasquatch.
Squatting for Sasquatch. How'd that go?
I didn't find anything. I did see a statue out there, though. But
did it belong to that person?
No, it might have been the last one a couple weeks ago.
Okay, gotcha.
Too many Bigfoot statues are missing out there. It's a shame.
It is a shame.
How about you?
Well, you know, I took up a new hobby.
What's your hobby?
I tap trees for maple syrup.
You know
and
what?
I'm jarring maple syrup.
That's a great. You know, I recently a few months back saw that process. It was kind of too cold out to see the actual maple fall from the tree, but they have the whole thing there in Deep River Park in Hobart. How did you like your experience, Bob? During the break,
it's sappy.
Sappy.
It was a quick-lived hobby. It's very very messy.
Yeah, talk to those trees and warm them up.
So, Count, we are at the time where we talk about the lore of the week presented to us by, ripped from the files of Dr. Ben Vanerson.
Wow.
And today we're talking about, I think, top five most popular cryptids of all time.
Really?
Yeah. So you got...
Let's rank them.
I would say, okay, Loch Ness Monster is number one.
Okay.
No.
Wait, are you talking about mine or in general?
I would still in general. I'd say the most popular cryptids in the world.
Yeah,
right?
Loch Ness is up there.
I would say
Nessie.
Bigfoot, Nessie, Mothman.
I mean, those are that's a solid top three. Right?
I mean, if you had to do like a Mount Rushmore of cryptids,
one more.
I would either say like
the Nightwalker,
the Fresno Nightcrawler is up there. It's not as well known though as like, you know, the Mothman and stuff.
Chupacabra.
Chupacabra. There you go. Chupacabra. And then the last one is something that I don't think people realize when they think of cryptids is the jackalope.
Jackalope.
The jackalope. The rabbit with the antlers.
Okay. That's
it. You know, we talked a couple weeks ago. Well, geez, a while ago. Was the concept of the tall tales from the lumberjack lore of cryptids. And one of those cryptids in that, you know, the version of that is called the jackalope. And the lore of them goes pretty bigger than, you know, the other ones we were talking about from like the lumberjack lore. You know, some of those were just like one sentence things that'll come and get you. Jackalopes have actually been like researched and cited and stuff for, you know, a very long time. And I would argue that the jackalope is probably one of the most popular creatures, you know. A lot of people, you see people talking about the jackalope and stuff, but I don't think people realize, you know, it's a cryptid.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. They think it's like an actual, you know, something they could go to the zoo and check out, right?
Yeah. So let's read a little bit about it, shall we? So this is coming to us from Legends of America. The jackalope is a cryptid creature of North American folklore described as a jackrabbit with antelope horns. The word jackalope is like a jackrabbit and an antelope. If you mix the two words together, it's kind of where we got the name from. Many jackalope taxidermy mounts, including the original, are made with deer antlers. In the 1930s, Douglas Herrick and his brother, hunters and taxidermy skills, popularized the American jackalope by grafting deer antlers to jackrabbit carcasses and selling the combination to a local hotel in Douglas, Wyoming. Thereafter, they made and sold many similar jackalopes to a retail outlet in South Dakota, and another taxidermist continues to manufacture horned rabbits in the 21st century. Stuffed and mounted, jackalopes are found in many bars and other places in the United States. Stores catering tourists sell jackalope postcards and other paraphernalia, and commercial entities in America and elsewhere have used the word jackalope as a logo and their marketing strategies. The jackalope has appeared in published stories, poems, televisions, video games, a low budget mockumentary film, which I cannot find, by the way. I've been looking for that thing. And the Wyoming Legislature has considered bills to make the jackalope the state's official creature.
Wow, really?
I would be thrilled if Wyoming came out and said, you know what, the jackalope is our state creature. The underlying legend of the jackalope, which the Wyoming taxidermists were building, may have related to similar stories in other creatures in other historical times. Researchers suggest that at least some tales of horned hares were inspired by sightings of rabbits infected with the Shope Papillonia virus. It causes a horn and antler-like tumors to grow in various places on a rabbit's head or body. Folklorists see the jackalope as one of the group of tall tail animals known as fearsome critters, which is the, you know, the lumberjack lore we talked about, common in North America culture since the turn of the 20th century. These fabulous beasts appear in tall tales featuring hodags, giant snakes, fur-bearing trout, and many others. If you guys are interested, go listen to the Paul Bunyan, not the Paul Bunyan episode. Don't go find that episode, please. But go listen to the Fearsome Critters episode. It's like a couple ones back on the Bob After Dark library there. Some such stories led themselves to comic hoaxing by entrepreneurs who seek attention for their own personal and their region's fortune. Jackrabbits, a little bit here, are actually hares rather than rabbits, though both are mammals in the family of whatever, you know, the rabbits are. And Wyoming is home to three species of hares, including the leprous. These are black-tailed jackrabbit, the white-tailed jackrabbit, and the snowshoe hare. The antelope is actually a very, it's not as common, but they're more closely related to giraffes, actually. Mm-hmm. So there, you got some background history of what a hare is and what an antelope is. Are we on the same page?
That's interesting.
Are we on the same page here?
We are, because okay. you hear about these different types of the critters, the hare, and of course the famous tortoise and the hare, and
yes.
the antelope. What's the old song? Give me a home where the deer and the antelope roam?
Yes. Yeah. So there you go.
So there you go. You get confused by that stuff.
Yep. No, now we're good.
We're good.
That's your Bob science fact of the day. Now we're going back to nonsense.
All right.
Stories or descriptions of animal hybrids have appeared in many cultures worldwide. A 13th century Persian work depicts a rabbit with a single horn like a unicorn. In Europe, the horned rabbit appeared in medieval and Renaissance folklore in Bavaria and elsewhere. Natural history texts such as the history book of the Natural Quadrangles by John Johnson in the 17th century, and illustrations such as the there's a plate by Horace Nightingale in 1525 in the 16th century included the horned hare as well. These early scientific texts described and illustrated the hybrids as though they were real creatures. But by the end of the 18th century, scientists generally rejected the idea of a horned hare as a biological species. References to horned hares may originate in sightings of rabbits affected with the Shope papillomia virus, named for Richard E. Shope, who described it in a scientific journal in 1933. Shope initially examined the wild cottontail rabbits that had been shot by hunters in Iowa and later examined wild rabbits from Kansas. They had numerous horn-like protrusions on the skin and various other parts of their bodies. The animals were referred to popularly as horned or warty rabbits, warty with a W. Legends about horned rabbits also occur in Asia and Africa as well as Europe, and the researchers suspect that the changes included by the virus might underlie at least some of the tales. In Central America, mythological references to a horned rabbit creature can be found in some native tribe lore, and some people believe, or you know, native to that neck of the woods, some people believe that they combine the hare and the the hare and the deer were paired often as like night and day in the calendar of Mesoamerican period of the Aztecs. So the concept of the hare and the deer are pretty, you know, you see them a lot combined in that style of art.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So the New York Times attributes the American jackalope's origin to a 1932 hunting outing involving Douglas Herrick of Douglas, Wyoming. Herrick and his brother studied taxidermy by mail order as teenagers, and when the brothers returned home from a hunting trip for jackrabbits, Herrick tossed a carcass into a taxidermy store where it came to rest beside a pair of deer antlers. The accidental combination of the animal forms sparked Herrick's idea for a jackalope. The first jackalope the brothers put together was sold for $10 to Roy Ball, who displayed it at Douglas's La Bonte Hotel. The head mounted was stolen in 1977, unfortunately, and the jackalope became a popular attraction in Douglas, where the Chamber of Commerce issues jackalope hunting licenses to tourists. The tags are good for hunting during official jackalope season, which occurs only one day, June 31st, a non-existent date is June 30th. June only has 30 days, from midnight to 2 a.m. The hunter must have an IQ greater of 50, but not over 72. Thousands of these licenses have been issued in Herrick's hometown of Douglas. There's also an 8-foot statue of a jackalope, and the town hosts an annual Jackalope's Day celebration in early June. Building on Herrick's success, Frank English of Rapid City, South Dakota, has made and sold thousands of jackalopes since retiring from the Air Force in 1981. He is the only supplier of altered animal heads to Cabela's,
wow,
a major outdoor theme retail company, and his standard and jackalopes actually hold a world record for being selling for about $150.
Really?
It's pretty cool, yeah.
That's not a bad price, I guess, for a...
In Man and Beast, an American comic legend, folklorist Richard Dorson recounts the Douglas variant, but also alternative that will surely infuriate the residents of Douglas. According to Dorson, in Mythical Creatures of North County, this was written in 1969, historian Walker D. Wyman acknowledged the existence of what he called the Alkali Area Jackalope of western United States. However, he expressed doubt that it predated the Jack Pine Jackalope of Minnesota and Wisconsin, a mythological throwback that defies even the most competent biologist of the region. Wyman claimed that there are three specimens of this primary jackalope in Augusta in west central Wisconsin. That is a lot. A cornucopia along the south shore of Lake Superior, and a North Shore Museum and lumber camp, all presumably shot by careless hunters during deer season. In 1978, revision and expansion of his book, which includes material of a porcupine, the snallygoster, the three-tailed barnivalus, the squonk, and many other creatures, Wyman devotes his pages to the jackalope. In a turnabout for his earlier claims to the North County, North Country origin for the antlered hare, he says, the center of its vast range seems to be Wyoming. Evidence of wide dispersal of the this creature, he originally claims, such as like the Tioga of Pennsylvania or the Hong Kong stamped on the mounted jackalope heads in bar rooms across the United States. The jackalope is a subject of outlandish and largely tongue-in-cheek claims embedded in tall tales of its habits. Jackalopes are said to be so dangerous that hunters are advised to wear stovepipes on their legs to keep from being gored. Stores in Douglas sell jackalope milk, but the New York Times questioned its authenticity on the grounds of milking a jackalope would be fraught with risk. One of the ways to catch a jackalope is to entice it with whiskey, the jackalope's beverage of choice. The jackalope can imitate human voice, according to legend. During the old days of the Old West, when cowboys gathered by their campfire singing at night, jackalope could be heard mimicking their voices or singing along, usually as a tenor. It is said that the jackalopes only breed during lightning flashes and that their antlers make actual difficult beside the hare's reputation for fertility. In 2005, the legislature of Wyoming considered a bill to make the jackalope the state's official creature. It passed by the House by 42-12 margin, but the session ended before the Senate could take up the bill, which died. In 2013, following the death of the bill's sponsor, Dave Edwards, the state legislator reintroduced the bill. It again passed the House but died in the rules of the committee and by the Senate. In 2015, three state representatives put forth the jackalope proposal again, this time House Bill 66, and again passed the House but died in the Senate committee. One of the co-sponsors, Dan Zwanazar, said, I'll keep bringing it up until it passes. In 2014, the Wyoming Lottery adopted the jackalope logo for its lottery tickets and marketing materials, and lottery officials officially chose the fictitious animal, which they name YOLO, the bucking horse, the other symbol for the state. Since Herrick and his brother began selling manipulated taxidermy heads in the 1930s, such as trophies, as well as jackalope postcards and related gift shop items, can be found in many places in Douglas. The student magazine of Santa Fe University of Art and Design in New Mexico is called The Jackalope. On the other side of the world, the Hop Factory Craft Beer in Newcastle, Australia, has the Leaping Jackalope as its logo. In 1986, James Abner, a senator of South Dakota, gave the U.S. President Ronald Reagan a stuffed jackalope during a presidential campaign stop in Rapid City. So, you know, we see a lot of different really cool, like, jackalope making an appearance in, like, different, you know, pieces of major media, right?
Yeah.
Pretty exciting stuff, huh?
It is exciting stuff, Bob. This is a creature, again, that kind of just escapes our mindset sometimes due to the utter fact of other creatures and cryptids out there. But it's plays a crucial part in the history and lore of cryptids. And you're making some sense out of it all right now for me. I got to tell you that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there is a retired military reader reached out to somebody with an encounter. They reached out to the Legends of America. So I'm going to read this letter exactly. Sure. Greetings. Well, it ain't mythical and it ain't extinct either. I wish I had a camera. But I am in Malatya, Turkey at the moment. And I was driving down the treacherous mountain road 3 nights ago, and I was only going about 30 kph when something came down the hill into the road. I thought at first it was a rock, so I slammed on the brakes, but then it hit my headlights. I never heard of these things before. The most fascinating creature I've ever seen. So naturally, I was quite curious to what kind of animal it was. It was probably about 3 feet tall at the back and ran like a dog, but kind of looked like a rabbit. But it had a miniature antler rack on its head that would be the biggest and most majestic buck, would make like the most majestic buck deer jealous. I got home and decided to look this thing up on the internet, and I was wondering if they were strictly found in the region of the world, only to be met with the onslaught of its fake legends, myths, cryptozoological, and one collaboration site, sort of. The site claimed that an all-horn-grown rabbit is cancerous and not calcium. They say that it's a tumorous material instead. Whilst the site is correct about cancer and causing tumors, the tumors always mishappen, saggy and pathetic-looking. What I saw was definitely regal and looked like a calcium-like antler. So I guess that I am officially one of those nutcases and embellished storytellers, but I know what I saw, and I saw it clearly. Nothing in my way, not a foggy night. It was very clear and very, very well lit up by my headlights. This was written in, actually, May 2022 from this person that's in Turkey. So even in Turkey, people are seeing what's considered to be the jackalope. Also, would you like to know what the jackalope's favorite song is?
Oh, man.
Apparently, when the cowboys would be singing in the Wyoming area at night, when the jackalopes were trying to imitate people's voices, they were caught in being more fond of the song Happy Trails.
Happy Trails. The classic Happy Trails to you until we meet again, right?
Yes, that is the jackalope's favorite song.
Now, why? Does it explain why? Because the fact that there's Happy Trails?
Happy Trails is probably a very popular tune, and that's just what they used.
Yeah, you're right. Back then, there was probably not many tunes they were singing back then. That makes sense.
Yes. So, what's your take on the concept of the jackalope there, Companic?
It's, a creature that's very fascinating. You hear about it sometimes, not too often, especially when you're making out your top five, right, or your top Mount Rushmore. You always got the Bigfoot, Nessie, Mothman. Chupacabra, but the jackalope, one that's beloved but doesn't get enough recognition.
I have friends that aren't into the paranormal by any means, or like cryptids or anything like that, but they certainly like the jackalope
because I feel like it's the most realistic one out of the bunch, maybe you could say, the most that you could possibly run into.
It's definitely a possibility. If I had to make my Mount Rushmore cryptids, definitely.
These are just your personal favorite?
No, these are what I would consider are like the biggest
ones. Oh, they are described.
So I would say 100% Bigfoot, Nessie, Mothman, the Chupacabra, and the Jackalope.
So Jackalope gets a bonus there.
I would say so. It definitely fits it because, like I said, most people are familiar with, if I showed them a Jackalope, like the hare with the antler, they're going to call it exactly what it is. Mm-hmm. And, apparently, I just got a word from a fan, Jim Norman, who will be listening on the podcast later. You'll be all excited to hear his name. Once upon a time ago, there was a show that was a companion piece to America's Funniest Home Videos called like America's Funniest People.
Okay.
And it was hosted by Dave Coulier.
Really? I don't remember this.
Yes. And apparently there was
Bob Saget
hosted America's Funniest Home Videos, but the companion show, America's Funniest People or whatever the show was called, had a segment on there that was a reoccurring segment with like a jackalope puppet. And Dave Coulier would voice over said puppet, I suppose.
Okay.
And it would say something about how the jackalope enjoys wood.
Okay, I remember. Was that Full House too? Didn't he do the?
I don't think it was a jackalope, but that was like a woodchuck or a beaver or something.
Yeah, a beaver or something like that. So this was a jackalope.
Yes.
Oh man, well, he's got to cut it out.
That was a bad joke, Companic.
All right, sorry about that. I had to do it. That show didn't really get much staying power, did it? As opposed to America's Funniest Home Videos. But at least good on Dave for bringing attention to the jackalope.
Yes. So that's the story.
Nice. So, what I mean, around here, you want to go look for some jackalope later?
I might go outside and whistle happy trails and see if I get a response. But as far as most of the creatures go, if they were to be exist, like if they actually existed in this way, and the reason why we're not seeing them, you know, stories go that the, you know, the people in that area hunted them to extinction. But it's kind of funny that there's still sightings even in Turkey as of May of last year.
I feel like, again, I feel like jackalope's one of those things that could be very tangible compared to the other cryptids.
Yeah, I mean, this guy called it out completely and said, you know, what I saw wasn't a tumor. It was an actual, like, full-on, you know, antler.
Yeah.
So, any closing words for the audience tonight, Count?
Well, happy trails, I guess, to you until we meet again.
Happy trails to you until we meet again, Count Panic.
I don't know. I'm not too sure about the rest of the lyrics.
That's the only part of the song I know.
I'm going to roll with that, right?
I'm going to toss it on in the car on the drive home here. It's good to be back. I missed you very much, Count.
Yeah, I missed you too, Bob.
You know, it's hard when I don't get to see you. Folks, real quick, this is just a fast message. Remember that I love every single one of you, and if you are suffering through something, you don't have to be silent about it. I'm here for you, and I care and love about you very much. All right, everybody. Thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. On behalf of me and Count Panic, we just want to say goodnight to all of you in sweet dreams. To my mother, I just want to wish you sweet dreams. Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're happy and comfortable doing whatever it is that you want to do. Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams of them all. Good night, everybody. And remember, the two most important rules of Bob After Dark are: not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.